This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
As a business owner, you need protection for your physical and financial assets. From general and professional liability insurance to business owners and commercial auto policies, GEICO can help. Go to geicocommercial.com for your free quote and see how much you could save today.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Old Man Winter makes an appearance. Good morning, I'm Jennifer Kashinka in for Gordon Deal, along with Rasa Kay on this Tuesday, December 26th. Here's what we have for you this hour.
It was a white Christmas for much of the Northeast and Midwest. A blizzard swept into parts of New England as bitter cold enveloped much of the West.
The first family is celebrating Christmas at the President's South Florida estate and golf club Mar-a-Lago.
Republican Jeff Flake, who's battled President Trump on a number of issues, is leaving the door open for a 2020 presidential run.
There have been some fatal accidents on the nation's rails lately, but train travel remains as popular as ever.
Congress required that all railroads across the country have a thing called positive train control. And what that means basically is a system for automatic braking or automatic slowing down trains based on speed limits and on track signals to try to prevent collisions or derailments.
That's Bart Jansen of USA Today. He'll be along in about 10 minutes with that story. It was quite the chilly holiday for folks in the Northeast and Midwest as a blizzard swept into parts of New England. Even the usually rainy Pacific Northwest got the white stuff. The National Weather Service says it's only the sixth time since 1884 that downtown Portland had measurable snow on a December 25th. Portions of Maine and New Hampshire got up to 10 inches of snow. Meteorologist Mark Chenard says wind gusts of up to 50 miles per hour made travel dangerous to impossible in many areas.
Very cold temperatures will continue over portions of the Great Plains into the Midwest. We're looking at high temperatures in the single digits, only around zero, and that goes from portions of South Dakota, North Dakota, into Minnesota, Wisconsin. Heading south of there into Chicago area, still looking at highs only in the single digits.
Minnesota experienced its most frigid Christmas day since 1996 with wind chills as cold as 35 degrees below zero. In Boston, airline officials say a JetBlue Airways plane slid off the taxiway at Logan Airport. JetBlue Flight 50 from Savannah briefly skidded when it landed around 7:15 p.m. This passenger says it felt like they were four-wheeling.
All of a sudden, we started sliding, and then we started spinning and spinning and spinning and ended up in a snowbank.
Firefighters helped passengers off the plane, and they were bused to the terminal. Authorities say no one was injured. President Trump spread some holiday cheer over the Christmas holiday, letting the world know that today it's back to work in order to make America great again. He shared a short video of himself and First Lady Melania.
On behalf of Melania, myself, Barron, and the entire Trump family, God bless you, God bless America, and have a very, very Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
The pair are spending the holiday at their Florida resort, Mar-a-Lago. And there were no sightings of the president, only the short message from White House Secretary Sarah Sanders saying that Trump was briefed on a suicide blast in Kabul that killed at least 10 people. His weekend tweets were all about the FBI, as he again criticized the agency. Trump's 10-day stay at Mar-a-Lago for the holiday is again drawing scrutiny. The Wall Street Journal notes that the president has visited one of his company's properties on nearly one-third of the days he has been in the White House. Trump's habit to visit and stay at his properties have long raised conflict of interest concerns. Senator Jeff Flake says he isn't ruling out a 2020 presidential run following his term in the Senate. The Arizona Republican, who announced in October he would not be seeking re-election in 2018, told ABC's This Week that he doesn't have any formal plans to run for president following his time on Capitol Hill, but he's not ruling it out.
I haven't thought that deeply about it, but I do believe if the president is running for re-election, if he continues on the path that he's on, that that's going to leave a huge swath of voters looking for something else.
Flake, a frequent critic of President Trump, announced his decision to retire with a speech on the Senate floor that criticized the coarsening tenor of politics in the U.S. and criticized his own party's complicity with Trump's behavior. On This Week, Flake was asked if he would consider running as a Republican or an independent. He repeated that he hasn't thought deeply about it. Flake added that he believes Trump is inviting challengers from all sides in 2020. Jennifer Kashinka in for Gordon Deal along with Ross Akay. A reminder, we can connect on social media. Friend us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter with the username at This Morning Show. Well, you might think that recent news about fatal train accidents would deter us from riding on rails, but rail travel remains quite popular. Bart Jansen of USA Today joins us now to talk about train travel. Bart, what impact might last week's Seattle area derailments have in the near term?
Well, there are some marketing folks that think that, at least in the near term, that it could discourage people from riding on Amtrak or riding passenger trains. Just you hear about an accident, you think, oh, well, maybe we can drive or maybe we can postpone a trip. But there's a lot of support for Amtrak. It remains popular. It grew to more than almost 32 million passenger trips last year. And so it has been popular, and people aren't expecting that to flag just because of an accident.
Bart, what's needed to make train travel even safer?
Well, we're in the midst of a national program. Congress required in 2008, after a fatal crash between a freight train and a commuter train in Southern California, Congress required that all railroads across the country have a thing called positive train control. And what that means basically is a system for automatic braking or automatic slowing down trains based on speed limits and on track signals to try to prevent collisions or derailments. And so an initial deadline was set for 2015. That the Congress later extended that to 2018. And so railroads are in the midst of installing this equipment. The deadline is a year from now. All railroads across the country are supposed to have this automatic braking. That is a process that folks think will greatly enhance the safety of rail travel.
We're speaking with Bart Jansen of USA Today. You mentioned how complicated this is. Is anyone being accused of dragging their feet on it? It just seems to be taking forever.
Well, there are some folks that think that Amtrak, for example, has been dragging its feet. They rely on who owns the tracks in a given area. As I said, freight companies are installing the stuff across the country, but like in this case, the accident track was actually owned by a commuter train called Sound Transit. And as I said, they are in the midst of installing it. They're going to beat the deadline. They expect to be done in the second quarter of next year, but that still left the system uninstalled or unactivated for this crash. So there are a lot of advocates that think it should have been installed faster. The railroads replied that it was both expensive. There were questions or technical difficulties getting the radio bandwidth, the space in the spectrum to allow the equipment to talk to each other. And out west, with the big open states that we have out west, there was complications with getting access to the right-of-way to actually put this equipment, to put essentially cell phone towers or signal towers along the tracks during those vast swaths of property out west.
Bart, where do we stand on funding for Amtrak, and why are some politicians so critical of Amtrak?
Yeah, well, that's the subsidies for Amtrak is more what draws criticism to Amtrak more than the safety with the few recent accidents they've had in recent years. A faction of House Republicans that just think it's wrong, it's a bad idea to subsidize a passenger railway like this. And President Trump, as he entered office earlier this year, he came out with a budget that proposed to cut $630 million from the $1.4 billion, so almost half of the government subsidy that Amtrak gets each year. A measure, and it was because he thought the trains were late and that they were operating or unreliable and operating at subsidies, so he was trying to get rid of that, particularly on the long-distance trains, the western trains, rather than the Northeast Corridor. But in a reflection of how much support Amtrak has in Congress, they're still in the midst of fighting. You may have heard we're haggling over the federal budget still, but the Senate lawmakers who make the spending decisions agreed to spend $1.6 billion on Amtrak, and the House agreed, stuck with the $1.4 billion. So we're still they're still negotiating. We've still got to figure out where the final number is going to be, but basically they ignored the president's proposal so far this year. Next year, we're expecting a massive infrastructure package that will deal with highways, rail, airports, all sorts of transportation, and so we'll have to see where Amtrak fits into that mosaic.
Thanks, Bart. Bart Jansen of USA Today. It's 20 minutes after the hour. Rasa Kay is here with today's top stories.
Well, Jen, Seattle got a white Christmas the first time in 9 years. The Christmas snow in Portland was just the sixth time since 1884. Several inches of the white stuff in Denver and Chicago was less remarkable, and the mix of ice with the snow across parts of New England downright messy for the holiday, spinning a JetBlue flight completely around after it landed on a patch of ice at Boston's Logan Airport last night.
It was like you were like going four-wheeling. They said that the wind coming in was really bad, and then he landed, and he thought he was okay, and then he hit some ice.
Passengers and the cool-headed pilot suffered no injuries. And through the middle Atlantic states, the holiday brought bluster. The wind so severe in New Jersey that the annual reenactment of George Washington and his soldiers crossing the Delaware River Christmas Day was canceled. The eldest daughter of Eric Garner is on life support in a Brooklyn hospital after suffering a heart attack, unable to breathe on her own. Garner died in 2014 when an NYPD officer placed him in a banned chokehold on Staten Island, helping to spark the Black Lives Matter movement. 27-year-old Erica Garner became an advocate against police brutality. Her family says her cardiac arrest Saturday was brought on by an asthma attack. A depressing milestone in California over the weekend, the Thomas Fire became the largest fire in the state's recorded history. The blaze has scorched some 280,000 acres, but is now 86% contained, according to the U.S. Forest Service. The Department of Homeland Security is calling the string of shootings targeting law enforcement in Pennsylvania's capital city Friday a terror attack. Ahmed Aminamin El-Mofty was shot and killed by Harrisburg police after he fired multiple times at officers throughout the city. Cops say he fired several times at a Capitol police officer, injured a state trooper, but that El-Mofty was killed in return fire. Jake Elliott's game-winning field goal with 22 seconds left helped the Eagles hold off the Oakland Raiders 19-10 on Christmas night in a game that saw the Birds struggle all the way through, head coach Doug Peterson.
We found a way to win. Bottom line, found a way to win. I'd love to win 40-3 or 34-28, but sometimes you're going to be in these games.
Well, and the Eagles clinched home field advantage throughout the playoffs with that win, meaning they won't have to travel until the Super Bowl.
And you did that story because?
Because I live in the Philadelphia area and I suffer from Stockholm Syndrome. Love my Eagles. Love my Birds.
Did you boo Santa Claus yesterday, though?
I would not dare.
All right. Thanks, Rasa. Jennifer Kishinka in for Gordon Deal on this holiday week. Thanks for joining us. Losing a pet is never easy. For some, it's such a terrible ordeal that they need to express their grief through an obit. Claire Ansbury has written an article in the Wall Street Journal about this new obit trend and joins us now. Claire, were pet obits ever placed in newspapers?
They were, but it had to be a famous pet or a pet belonging to a famous person. And then there have also been some celebrities who have posted obits about their pet. I think it was Sarah Silverman posted about the death of her dog. So if it was a famous dog or a dog belonging to a famous person or any sort of pet, then they might get a mention in the newspaper obit, but not very much.
What if a regular person, you or me, wanted to put something in a newspaper?
You might have a hard time doing that. Some newspapers, but not very many, might let you have a little mention in the classified if you want to pay for it. But newspapers in the past who have done this there's a lot of backlash from the readers. They don't want the picture of a dog next to their mother who died. There was in an Iowa town that happened. A dog named Bear died, and it ran the sister-in-law of a woman who also passed and whose obit was right next to the dog's was furious, and she wrote a letter demanding an apology for not only her family but every family who had an obit on that page. And so they're political. I mean, they can, you know, it really gets down to, you know, what do you define as a family? You know, obits now may include a pet as a survivor, but that's not even really commonplace either. There's just a sense of obituaries are for humans and people, and pets are still largely classified as properties. So some people say they belong in the classifieds.
We're speaking with Claire Ansbury, The Wall Street Journal. So, Claire, this has all opened up a new frontier online, correct?
Right, right. I mean, you know, people post so much on Facebook that, you know, if a pet is near and dear to them, and, you know, some people have had pets for 20 years, their whole childhood. And so if they're grieving, they want to let family and friends know. And, you know, Facebook is kind of a protected, in a way, circle that, you know, you're going to get sympathy. You know, you probably can't call into work, call off work because your dog died. You won't get much sympathy there. But if they, you know, they can acknowledge it on Facebook so people know that there's a loss. And, you know, then they could also honor their pet and explain why it's been, you know, such a special part of their lives. So people are using Facebook more. There's also online websites that are dedicated to pet memorials. And people write at length about their pet. They find it cathartic in a lot of ways.
Thanks, Claire. Claire Ansbury of the Wall Street Journal. It's 30 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
Give your employees the power to do their best work and maximize this year's budget when you update to new, powerfully performing Dell Business PCs with Intel Core processors. Dell's dedicated small business advisors mean you'll always get the best deal on the right solution for your business. Get up to 35% off select business PCs now until the end of December. Did I mention there's free shipping? Visit Dell.com/small business or call 877-BUY-DELL. That's 877-BUY-DELL.
When a state ranks among the top 10 in the country for major new and expanded facilities, that's pure growth. When it's tops for three straight years, that's pure Michigan. Long known as a world leader in the automotive industry, Michigan is also a leader in defense, cybersecurity, mobility, agribusiness, and aerospace. In fact, CNBC rates Michigan among the top 10 states in the country for business. To learn more, visit MichiganBusiness.org.
Listen to us anytime on TuneIn at This Morning, America's First News with Gordon Deal, and on Stitcher at This Morning with Gordon Deal. It's Tuesday, December 26th. The Jennifer Kishinka in for Gordon Deal, along with Rasa Kay. Some of our top stories and headlines this morning. It was a white Christmas for many, but also a freezing one for residents in the Midwest and Northeast. Disney's Star Wars The Last Jedi continued to rule the box office, collecting $100.7 million over the four-day weekend. In a rematch of last spring's NBA Finals, the Warriors beat the Cavaliers 99-92 in the first of two regular season matchups. And the world's top banana is doomed. That story in about 25 minutes. Will the new tax changes help your finances? Many don't think so. Here's this morning's Gordon Deal.
We're speaking with Mark Hamrick, senior economic analyst at Bankrate.com. We're talking about how a new survey indicates Americans don't trust Washington to positively impact their finances. I can imagine, though, we generally don't trust. Does a survey, I don't know, fluctuate much from year to year or administration to administration? How does this work?
Yeah, good question, Gordon, and thanks for having me. Americans, as it turns out, are increasingly pessimistic about the relationship between their elected leaders in Washington and their money. So, you know, what might have been a bad relationship before seems to be getting worse, and, you know, we don't know exactly why, but, you know, we'll leave it perhaps to members of your audience to try to interpret that part. But we asked Americans, essentially whether they think the elected leadership in Washington will have a positive impact on their finances, a negative one, or no impact. And we found that 23% of Americans think that there'll be a positive impact, and that is less positive than a year ago. 40% believe the impact will be negative, and that is more negative than a year ago. And 30% see no impact either way. So you step away from this, and it turns out that then 70% think that there'll either be no impact or a negative impact on their finances, and I would suggest that is a pretty resoundingly negative answer.
You know, it's puzzling because this was measured, I guess, over year, yet the stock market's been roaring. Do folks in the survey, I guess, not credit the government, rightly or wrongly, with having, you know, an impact on their finances in that way?
Yeah, I think there's probably a lot of things going on here. First of all, we know historically Americans have falling trust in institutions, and obviously to the extent that the federal government is in an institution, it falls prey to that risk. The other part is that we know that members of Congress and the president have relatively low ratings in the sense of approvals, meaning high negatives and low positives. And then the other part is I think there probably is at least a perception of a disconnect between what's happening on Wall Street and what's happening in financial markets. Mm. And the other part is we know longer term, Gordon, that stocks go up and stocks go down, and I think people are probably trying to take a longer term perspective with respect to all that.
How does this break down, Mark, by generation/age?
Yeah, well, put it simply, the older people get, the more optimistic they were about the impact of Washington on their personal finances. And then to flip that, obviously millennials were the most negative. And I think there's some wisdom in that to some degree, or at least it's explainable, because look at what happened with the tax bill. Essentially, future generations are having to pay the tab for an immediate improvement in your cash flow to the tune of more than $1 trillion, mm-hmm. the cost of the debt. So who gets socked with that? Essentially, everybody who's living down the road, and young people obviously are, as represented by millennials, now the largest age group anyway.
We're speaking with Mark Hamrick, senior economic analyst at Bankrate.com, talking about their new survey about how Americans feel Washington may be impacting their finances. Was there a political breakdown to this?
Yeah, absolutely. Republicans were more optimistic, and Democrats were resoundingly pessimistic. 57% of Republicans expect a positive impact, and 68% of Democrats expect a negative impact. Mm. And independents were divided mostly between negative and seeing no impact. In other words, 42% of independents thought there would be a negative impact on their finances, and 38% thought there would be none. And you add those together, that's 80%. And obviously, if you think about midterm elections coming up in 2018, obviously it's the middle that helps to decide where the election goes, and that doesn't bode well for the party that's now in power. I would add, Gordon, by the way, we try to step back from all this here at Bankrate. We need to think about the fact that, as roughly 80% of Americans do see more money coming into their bank accounts in the new year, we need to think about trying to achieve our financial objectives, which are really two things: paying down debt and saving more money.
That's this morning's Gordon Deal with Mark Hamrick of Bankrate. It's 20 minutes before the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Jennifer Kashinka in for Gordon Deal along with Rasa Kay in this holiday week. Happy holidays to you. And now that the wrappings are off, what do you do with all those bows and paper? Well, it's more complicated than you think. Elizabeth Weiss of USA Today is here to help. Elizabeth, what's wrong with chucking all that paper in the garbage?
Well, you can chuck it in the garbage. You can't chuck it in the recycling. That's the issue.
And what's the problem with putting it in recycling?
The recycling that we do in the United States, a large proportion of it, we end up baling up and selling to the Chinese, who actually then turn it into cardboard that comes back to us because that's what they ship the things that we buy from them back to us in. So the Chinese are trying to clean up their recycling industry. They're trying to get away from little mom-and-pop factories, and they want to get to bigger, more modern factories. And to do that, they need a cleaner waste stream, is the phrase when you start talking to trash people that they use. And so the Chinese are going down to a 1%, and they may even go down as low as 0.5% non-compliant materials allowed in those bales of paper that we sell them. And what that means is that the trash company that picks up my trash and that picks up your trash and that take some of that out for recycling is going to have to start paying more to recycle that material. And so whether you're recycling because you think it's good for the earth or because you're recycling just because you don't want your trash bills to go up or you want to keep stuff out of the landfill, Christmas morning when you're cleaning up everything, there's a couple of simple things you can do that are going to keep the waste stream cleaner.
Elizabeth, were we always sending our recycling to China or is this a fairly new development?
You know, we've been doing this for a fairly long time. There's a lot of interesting moving parts to this. So when we started recycling in earnest in the U.S. in the 70s and 80s, some of that material was recycled here, and some still is recycled here. But think of all of those container ships that come from China full of Xboxes and iPhones and everything else that is manufactured in China and brought here. All of those containers, those great, huge rectangular boxes, go back empty to China. And so we fill them with waste paper that goes back to Chinese recyclers. So it's actually kind of it works out very well economically, especially for the shipping costs. And so it makes economic sense for that stuff to go back.
We're speaking with Elizabeth Weiss of USA Today. Elizabeth, what is the problem with bows and ribbon?
Especially with bows and ribbons, wrapping paper is fine. Plain wrapping paper totally goes in recycling. You want to avoid the stuff that's really metallic or glittery or it's got that felt flocking on it that looks a bit like velvet. That's not so recyclable. Bows are a problem because they're made out of a plastic paper composite and they've got a lot of glue on the back and that's not very good for the recycling process.
Thanks, Elizabeth. Elizabeth Weiss of USA Today. It's 13 minutes before the hour. Gordon Deal with the week off. Jennifer Kishinka and Rasa Kay with you. This portion of the show brought to you by the state of Michigan. If you want to take your business to the top, take it to a top 10 state for business, Michigan. Contact MichiganBusiness.org today. Fueled by high consumer confidence and a strong job market, retail sales in the holiday period rose at their best pace since 2011. MasterCard Spending Pulse, which tracks both online and in-store spending, says sales rose about 5% between November 1st and Christmas Eve, compared with a 3.7% gain a year ago. Retailers benefited this year from Christmas Day falling on a Monday, giving shoppers a full weekend to scoop up last-minute purchases. December 23rd ranked next to Black Friday in terms of spending. All that spending, a relief to retailers from department store giants like Macy's to mall favorites like Gap, that struggled through a difficult year of store closures, declining foot traffic and bankruptcies by chains including Sports Authority, Toys R Us, and Payless Shoes. But in a cautionary sign, credit card delinquency rates jumped 16% in the fall, indicating consumers may be spending above their means and could slow their purchasing next year. It's 9 minutes before the hour. Rasa Kay is here with more of America's First News.
Well, Jen, there was snow on the ground in 12 states on Christmas, delighting kids in generally snow-free Seattle, but overwhelming travel conditions there and in parts of New England, where Boston's Logan Airport had to be closed for a time to clear the white stuff. A JetBlue plane skidded off the taxiway there last night on landing after apparently hitting a patch of ice and turned completely around before stopping between two taxiways.
It was crazy because it was normal, then all of a sudden it started getting rough, and it just all happened pretty fast, but my daughter slept the entire time through the landing.
No injuries reported. The upper Midwest is in the deep freeze, with states from Montana and the Dakotas to Wisconsin enduring wind chill temperatures in places at 40 below zero.
It gets below zero and then temperature, it doesn't really matter. Just numbers after that, you know. Yep. It's cold. Cold is cold and you gotta adjust.
Citizens just shrugging off the chill and shrugging on more layers. The foreign ministers of Pakistan and Afghanistan are making a joint appeal to Taliban militants to join peace talks following a meeting organized by China. Today's joint statement by the three governments calls for a broad-based and inclusive peace and reconciliation process following near-daily Taliban attacks in areas across Afghanistan. A woman and two children were killed and a police officer injured during a six-hour standoff with a gunman who barricaded himself inside a Phoenix, Arizona apartment on Christmas Day. Police negotiated for hours with a gunman in an attempt to save the lives of the 11-year-old and an infant the man had taken hostage, but to no avail. He was taken into custody with no apparent injuries. The woman's body was found outside the apartment. A new report from the Brennan Center for Justice at New York University finds all crime across major U.S. cities fell in 2017. Data from police departments in the country's 30 largest cities show the murder rate dropped 5.5%, overall crime rate down 3%, and the violent crime rate dropped 1%. A psychologist for the Los Angeles County Public Health Department says he's the one who delivered a gift wrap package of horse manure to the Los Angeles mansion of U.S. Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin. Robert Strong tells Reuters he did it to protest the federal tax overhaul signed into law last week by President Trump. He has not yet been charged with anything.
How do you think they knew what was in there?
They used the LAPD sent the bomb squad, a bomb robot, to check it out. So, yeah.
There may have been other things coming out of that box.
Yeah, let's blow it up.
Oh, gosh. Banana fans take note. The world's top banana is facing extinction, and no one can seem to find a replacement. The Wall Street Journal says scientists around the world are rushing to find and develop new types of bananas, driven in part by a potential crisis in the supply of the Cavendish, the variety commonly found in supermarkets. Bananas are one of the world's most popular fruits, including in the U.S., which imports $2.3 billion worth each year. The Cavendish is under threat of extinction from a fungal disease that's spreading around the world, killing the plants that bear the fruit. The disease is estimated to have damaged more than 30% of Asia's and Australia's banana plantations and has made its way to Africa and the Middle East. If it reaches Latin America and the Caribbean, source of 85% of the world's banana exports and the majority of U.S. fruit, it could wipe billions of dollars from the export industry. So scientists are roaming through rural areas and working in their labs in pursuit of a possible alternative, though it's proving hard to find bananas with consumer appeal. Many of them are ugly and they taste a little strange. That'll do it for this hour. For Rasa Kay, I'm Jennifer Kishinka. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.